Welcome to Hoosier Ag This Week, as the award-winning news team of Hoosier Ag Today brings you the top news stories from this past week impacting Indiana's farmers, Indiana's ag businesses, and the state's most important industry, agriculture. We certainly hope that you and your loved ones had a Merry Christmas earlier this past week. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and coming up on today's show, January 20th is the day that Donald Trump will be sworn in for the second time as he returns to the White House as president. You'll hear from Trump's former Ag Secretary, Sonny Perdue, as he talks about Trump's tariff proposals. Well, even though Christmas has come and gone, the season of giving is never over. Eric Pfeiffer reports how you can help FFA members with families facing financial burdens still be able to wear the blue corduroy FFA jacket with pride. And with this being our final show of 2024, we'll take a look back at some of the biggest ag news stories of the year that you heard us cover right here on Hoosier Ag Today. But first, your lawmakers in Congress on December 20th passed a last-minute spending bill that not only prevented a shutdown of the federal government, it continued to extend the 2018 Farm Bill through September 30th of 2025. That same bill also extends federal spending through March 14th. It also provides nearly $21 billion to help farmers with disaster losses, and it includes $10 billion in emergency aid to farmers and ranchers. However, that bill did not allow for the year-round sale of E15 fuel, which had been included in a previous version of the funding bill, which was shot down by President Trump just days before. Another development over the past week has been the on-again, off-again reporting requirement deadline of the Corporate Transparency Act. If you fail to comply with the act, it could mean up to 2 years in prison and a fine of up to $10,000. The U.S. Treasury Department is requiring small business owners, including over 230,000 farmers and ranchers, to file a new report called the Beneficial Ownership Information Report. And that's with the Treasury Department's Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, or FinCEN for short. Dustin Shearer with American Farm Bureau Federation says the measure was initially set up to fight money fraud.
It's information that the federal government believes will help them identify shell companies that are being used to launder money. And because they couldn't come up with a good definition of shell company, they put out a definition that essentially qualifies every small business in America as a potential shell company.
In late November, a federal judge in Texas issued a nationwide injunction stopping the government from enforcing the act. But just days before Christmas, that injunction was overturned by an appeals court. To make matters worse, the original deadline for filing that report was January 1st.
Shortly thereafter, the federal government issued a statement saying anybody who had that deadline, we will extend the filing deadline to January 13th.
The day after Christmas, that appeals court decided to reverse their previous decision, which once again delays the reporting requirement indefinitely. Shearer says you should still consult with a tax and law professional just in case.
You should check with a lawyer or your CPA. But if you had to file any type of document with the state government in order to create your business entity, then you are very likely required to file your beneficial ownership information, and you should file to be safe.
Read more about the Corporate Transparency Act at HoosierAgToday.com. We've been reporting for several years now on the conflict that Mexico created when their former president said he would ban genetically modified corn imports from the U.S. Well, now that a dispute panel has recently ruled against Mexico, Indiana native and national ag leader Ted McKinney tells Hoosier Ag Today he is elated with the outcome of the USMCA dispute panel's ruling.
The significance of this decision is untold in its value.
And that's Ted McKinney, CEO of the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture, or NASDA for short. The conflict started nearly 4 years ago when Mexican President Obrador issued a decree to ban genetically modified corn imports by the end of this year. He modified that decree back in February 2023 when he immediately banned the imports of all genetically modified white corn. A dispute panel on Friday issued a ruling that Mexico had violated its commitments under the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement when it issued those decrees.
It first reinforced that perhaps the finest trade agreement in the world, and I do believe USMCA is the finest in the world, can stand pressures, and that good science and common sense, frankly, can prevail. And that's what's happened here. And so people should not just ho-hum this. This is a decision of epic proportion, not just for the U.S. and Mexico, but for the world.
Is there now an appeals process for Mexico?
Well, we understand that there is that, but we have not heard from our friends at the U.S. Trade Rep's office what, if any, penalties might be available to the U.S. should Mexico choose not to abide. So there's a lot of unknown in that. Remember, Canada weighed in support of the U.S. claims. So it was really both Canada and the U.S. Making this.
McKinney adds that the decision goes beyond preventing economic disaster. It also prevents a rollback in our scientific advancement.
It would undermine the entire trust of biotechnology as one of the most valuable tools in the history of agriculture, I believe. That's why I say elated, and that's why I say this is of epic proportion, and positively so, I might add.
You can check out my full conversation with Tipton County native Ted McKinney. It's at HoosierAgToday.com and the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app. It's time now for Hoosier Ag Today's Farm Market Review, and Andy Eubank is here now. Happy New Year, Andy.
Hey, thanks, CJ. Happy New Year to you, too. It was a mixed day of trade in the corn, soybean, and wheat markets on Friday. We'll have the final numbers coming up. We'll begin, though, with market analysis. For that, I turn to Brian Basting in the middle of the trading session. Brian, with Advanced Trading. Corn is up a little as we speak. Beans down about a nickel. Wheat up about a nickel. It's been an interesting week as we look at short covering, then some profit taking, and certainly end of year positioning.
Well, thanks for having me, Andy. It's always an interesting time of year, the end of year. And this year is no exception because we're seeing a little bit of a weather scare in Argentina. Not so much today and on Friday, but Thursday, we saw corn futures make the highest price since June 25th. So basically a six-month high in corn futures with the concern about hot, dry weather for the early corn that's pollinating as we speak in Argentina. Now, that's not the entire crop. They have late-planted corn that actually won't pollinate until well into January, if not early February. But the early-planted corn is pollinating now, and it's supposed to get very hot next week, 90s. Maybe even low hundreds, not a lot of rain. So the market's taken note of that. That would impact the Argentina exports typically from March through June of 25. So that's the biggest news this week. We're also seeing good export business, another good report from the USDA here on Friday with their export sales report. It was delayed today due to Christmas, of course. Really strong sales, almost 70 million bushel. So that's a strong sales number here, continuing to say the U.S. is the main shop in town for corn. Beans had a good rally on Thursday. Soybean meal reached the highest price, Andy, since October 17th. So over a two-month high there. Beans only about a two-week high. But soybean meal, Argentina is the biggest soybean meal producer in the world. So I don't want to get your listeners thinking that we're right in the middle of pod set and pod fill in Argentina. Far from it. That'll be closer to the first week or so of February, end of January, first of February.
Brian Basting there at Advanced Trading. Brian's number 309-664-2314. Now the Friday final numbers. March corn up a quarter cent, 454. It stayed right near even all day. May up a penny, 461.5. July up 0.75 cents, 464.5. 980 at the end for January beans, down 8. March, 989.75, down 7.5. And 7 cents lower May beans, $10.5. A nickel and a half gain for March wheat, 546.5. May up almost a nickel at 556.75. In the meats, February live cattle, 190.65, a gain of 55 cents. Down a nickel for Febline hogs, 84.15. You are up to date now on the markets. Much more still to come on the weekend show. I'm Andy Eubank. This is Hoosier Ag This Week.
From the Farm Bill to foreign farmland ownership and international trade, ag policy is having a big impact on Indiana farming operations. The Hoosier Ag Today Indiana Ag Policy Podcast provides in-depth coverage on these and many other important and complex issues. Get the details behind the headlines with the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast, hosted by Eric Pfeiffer. You can find it at HoosierAgToday.com, the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app, and wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
A mild and damp pattern continues for the last weekend of 2024. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's Weekend Weather Outlook. And we're looking at a, well, not necessarily super nice pattern for the balance of this year. I do think that a large part of the state is mostly dry for Saturday here. But when I say mostly dry, all I'm talking about is not a lot of additional precipitation. It seems like we had the biggest chunk of moisture come through yesterday and last night, pushing off to the north across the Great Lakes. So today we're kind of devoid of additional moisture, have a secondary wave that will be coming through the Hoosier State and all of the Eastern Corn Belt overnight tonight through tomorrow. But for your Saturday here, while we don't have new precipitation, I don't think we dry out exceptionally well either. A lot of clouds kind of stuck in here. If you see sunshine off and on through the day Saturday here, let's call it a bonus and get ready for more clouds. Moving into the overnight, rain pushes into southwestern Indiana first, right close to midnight, then spreads across the rest of the state through the pre-dawn hours and all the way through tomorrow afternoon. So it is going to be a very wet Sunday forecast period here across the region. All in, all done. For the weekend, again, not much happening today, but tomorrow I think we can see anywhere from an additional quarter to 1 inch of precipitation with coverage at nearly 100% of the Hoosier State. So definitely seeing a wet finish to the weekend. Now, colder air is on the move next week. It doesn't come right away on Monday. I think Monday is still rather mild. Probably don't get rid of clouds all the way, but maybe we see clouds in some sunshine. Low pressure comes out of the central plains and southern plains overnight Monday night into Tuesday. That's New Year's Eve. That likely brings rain back to the Hoosier State. At this point, I'm looking for rain from midnight Monday night through midday Tuesday. And then cold air comes in. Can rain end as snow Tuesday afternoon and evening? Possibly, especially in Tuesday evening, but I don't think it's going to be a lot. Liquid equivalent precipitation for that Monday through Tuesday time frame, a tenth to six-tenths of an inch with coverage around 75% of the state. Behind it, though, we are significantly colder for New Year's Day forward. Cold Arctic air on the move out of the Canadian prairies. It sits here all the rest of the week through the weekend. Going into the 5th, we see a little bit of moisture coming into that cold air, so a chance of snow in the north, maybe some rain in the south, and followed by a reinforcing shot of cold air for the week of the 6th. So definitely getting temperatures back closer to where they should be as we flip the calendar into 2025. And we're also then going to be seeing, I think, a yo-yoing of temperatures through probably mid-month in January. Cold air the dominant feature, but ever so often we get a little snippet of warm air trying to lift northward. I'm Ryan Martin.
Well, we've survived another year, another growing season, another election cycle, and plenty of market volatility. All of us at Hoosier Ag Today are proud that we've been able to keep you informed of the latest farm news, markets, and weather developments in 2024, and honored that once again you have made us the most listened to farm network in the state. On air and online, and ready for 2025, we are Hoosier Ag Today.
Welcome back to Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and in just a little more than 3 weeks from today, Donald Trump will return to the White House as president. However, there are some ag leaders and economists who have been expressing their concerns over Trump's tariff proposals and the impact it could have on America's farmers and the ag industry.
Let's be patient. Obviously, I think President Trump is rightfully using an effective tool in order to accomplish fairness for the United States of America.
And that's Sonny Perdue, who served as Ag Secretary during President Trump's previous administration. Trump says he wants to impose a 60% tariff on all Chinese imports, and he says he's also considering imposing 25% tariffs on Mexican and Canadian imports if they don't clamp down on two things, the immigration issue, and the smuggling of fentanyl into the U.S.
Over the past years, particularly with China, we've been patsies in that way with experiencing very unfair trade practices there. Obviously, does any farmer or rancher want fentanyl coming into this country? Absolutely not. Do we want our borders unsecure? Absolutely not. Again, while we did have tariffs in the first administration of Trump, you saw through the trade appropriations, we made good on that for the most part. Not totally, as you might expect, but again, if I can do something to stop fentanyl, I'm willing to sacrifice a little bit.
Purdue says that Trump will also work to eliminate the ag trade deficit, which was $31.8 billion in fiscal year 2024, according to USDA.
The president also recognizes what an independent food production system we have in this country means for national security. Shame on us if we ever allow ourselves to become dependent on international efforts for our food supply, as many countries are, including China, which cannot feed their people. So the president understands that.
Most of all, Purdue says that Trump has always expressed his personal concerns for the welfare of America's farmers.
I rarely left the Oval Office when I was secretary that the president didn't ask me. And these were 2017 and 18. Those were tough times on the farm. We were undergoing those tariffs. And he said, Sonny, how am I? We could be talking about anything internationally, not including agriculture. He said, Sonny, how are my farmers doing? I said, well, Mr. President, it's tough out there. He'd look at me in the eye, pointing his finger at me, and say, you take care of them. And I think he means that.
You can hear much more of my conversation with former U.S. Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue. It's at HoosierAgToday.com. Well, if you're an Indiana woodland owner and you have questions or concerns about managing your property, one of your best resources may be the Indiana Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts. Liz Rice is their executive director.
If you have a resource concern on your land, let's say invasive species are a big topic these days, or if you're trying to improve your forest or your woodland and you would like some technical assistance, go to your Soil and Water Conservation District office, and they will either be able to provide you those resources directly, or they will be able to point you to the right office, the right person across our Indiana Conservation Partnership.
Rice says if you need their help, they're not far from where you are.
In Indiana, we are blessed to have one Soil and Water Conservation District in each of our 92 counties. And these Soil and Water Conservation Districts are all locally led conservation offices. And when I say locally led, that means that somebody in Indianapolis isn't telling somebody down in Spencer County how they should be managing their natural resources. It's actually elected and appointed leaders and staff determining what the local conservation priorities and needs are so that then they can design programs, access funding to address those locally identified priorities.
She adds that she and her team are part of a unique partnership in Indiana.
So we actually have the Indiana Conservation Partnership that involves the Indiana Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts, the Department of Natural Resources, the State Department of Agriculture, the State Soil Conservation Board, the Department of Environmental Management, Purdue Extension, and the Farm Service Agency. So that strong partnership ensures that we are able to combine forces to develop programming, resources, and policies that can help really benefit our woodland owners.
Read more at HoosierAgToday.com. Well, even though Christmas has come and gone for another year, the season of giving is never over. Eric Pfeiffer reports how you can help give the gift of leadership skills, personal growth, and career success. And you can do that by giving the gift of blue through FFA.
That's our identity. And when we put that FFA jacket on, that gives us a community that is so much bigger than who we are individually.
That's National FFA President Thaddeus Bergschneider from Illinois talking about the well-recognized FFA jacket that means so much to each of the over 1 million FFA members nationwide.
And you can give that gift to FFA members across the country, helping remove that financial barrier and giving them the opportunity to have a place and a jacket within our organization.
An $85 gift will provide a member with a jacket and tie or scarf. A donation of any amount helps. Bergschneider explains what it was like the first time he put on an FFA jacket.
My first contest was Ag Sales as a freshman. And at that time, I didn't have my own FFA jacket. And so I have on my dress pants, I have on my white shirt, I have on my tie, I need to leave in 10 minutes. Dad, I don't have an FFA jacket. And he takes me back in the closet and he digs out his. And it's more purple than blue at this point, but I put it on, and yeah, it might not fit completely right, but it's an FFA jacket. So for my first FFA competition, I was Paul Bergschneider. And then when I was elected to be the national FFA president, actually, I put that jacket back on because I figured I'd want that to be the last jacket I wore because it was also the first jacket I wore. So that first FFA jacket has a special place in my heart.
If you're thinking about end-of-year giving, visit ffa.org/giveblue to donate. National FFA is a nonprofit 501c3. Your donation is tax deductible. You will receive an email receipt for tax purposes. I'm Eric Pfeiffer.
Coming up, we'll take a look at the biggest ag news stories of 2024. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and this is Hoosier Ag This Week.
What are you doing, New Year's?
AgBioScience, the number one ag tech podcast globally, is now available on video. Hear the latest from innovators in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture.
We started these innovation challenges back in 2020 out of an early conversation with Indiana Corn Marketing Council, Indiana Soybean Alliance, Courtney Kingery, the CEO there. She and I sat down. She was new. I was new. Like, man, we have a lot of smart people, innovators. We have a lot of smart, really progressive, forward-thinking farmers. Wouldn't it be cool if we brought the two of them together and tried to fix some things? The pilots have been wildly effective. Four of the five producer-led innovation challenge winners have either been acquired or have gone on to receive follow-on funding, massive market validation. Using those, thinking those as pilots, this is the graduation stage. This is how do we take those pilots, how do we scale them across a full year, and then how do we be really intentional during that year about turning these actions into outcomes?
Get more episodes online at agrinovisindiana.com. Click on podcasts. Also available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Thank you again for joining us here on Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today. And with 2024 coming to a close, we thought we'd take a look back at some of the top ag news stories that you heard us cover here on Hoosier Ag Today. The biggest story of the year may have been the volatility of the commodity markets and the continued drop that we're seeing in grain prices. In fact, if you compare the numbers at the close of trade on December 29th of last year and compare those to the close on Friday, December 27th of this year, the nearby contract for corn has fallen by 17.5 cents a bushel, wheat is down by 81.5 cents a bushel, but the biggest drop that we've seen has been in soybeans. They've fallen by $3.13 a bushel this year alone. Market analyst Tom Fritz with EFG Group says one of the biggest factors pressuring the grain markets has been the competitiveness of corn and soybeans in South America, which he says will likely continue into 2025.
It's all about the big crop that's going to be coming out of Brazil within the next month and a half. We're still trying to figure out just how big it is. But right now, you know, to me, it's all about the soybean market and, you know, trying to find a bottom.
While grain prices have been dipping lower and lower, the yields for Indiana's corn and soybean crops have been climbing higher and higher, as Blake Russell with Channel Seed shared with Andy Eubank back in October.
Yeah, yields have been very good. We've had some, you know, great yields depending on locations. A couple of places had a little bit of drought, but overall yields in both corn and soybeans have been very good, and our growers have met or exceeded expectations for this year.
However, we heard back in September from Dr. Darcy Talinko, field crop pathologist at Purdue, how tar spot was having an impact on corn yields.
Tar spot, initially, those spores need a lot of leaf wetness for those initial spores to infect and cause the disease. So in some areas, we've seen that where we've had the right moisture turned on the disease.
She also told us how red crown rot was rearing its ugly head and impacting Indiana's soybean crops.
This pathogen pretty much eats up the root system, and so we've seen up to 50% yield loss of those plants.
On the livestock side, Indiana's commercial poultry and dairy farms were spared from having positive cases of the bird flu virus. Back in March, the first case of the H5N1 virus was identified in dairy cattle. It's now been found across 16 different states, affecting nearly 900 different herds.
Dr. Brett Marsh, who was state veterinarian with the Indiana State Board of Animal Health, told Hoosier Ag Today earlier this year just how difficult it is to stop the spread of the H5N1 virus.
Once it enters a state, they start with two or three, and the next thing you know, it's six and 10, et cetera, and so it moves within those populations. So we're trying to learn from an epi standpoint, so how is this virus moving? And it appears that it's people and hands and feet and cattle movements, and so we have to be aware that this virus is clearly on the move.
Dr. Marsh has since been hired as the new dean of Purdue's College of Veterinary Medicine. 2024 was also a year that brought about changes in leadership. Here in Indiana, Senator Mike Braun decided not to run for another term in Washington and instead had his sights set to run for Indiana governor. Republican delegates during the Indiana GOP convention last June chose Noblesville Minister Micah Beckwith as their lieutenant governor candidate. Here in Indiana, the lieutenant governor also serves as the head of the Indiana State Department of Agriculture. During the lieutenant governor debate that was held at the Indiana State Fair in August, Beckwith said that Braun had a plan to lower property taxes for Indiana's farmers.
Farmers have seen an increase from last year to this year, 26.2% increase in property taxes. That's insane. That's absolutely out of control. And farmers need the relief. The Braun-Beckwith plan is going to bring that relief to farmers. We're going to make sure that they have, that never again will you ever be able to outpace economic growth of an area.
Braun easily beat his Democratic opponent, Jennifer McCormick, and he'll become Indiana's 52nd governor next month. Braun is keeping Don Lamb on board to continue serving as director of the Indiana State Department of Agriculture. Meanwhile, Donald Trump won the presidential election in November. He'll return to the White House as president in just a few weeks. Trump has nominated Brooke Rollins to serve as his next U.S. Ag Secretary. Trump's previous Ag Secretary, Sonny Perdue, shared his thoughts on Rollins.
I love Brooke Rollins. I think she has a heart for America. She has a heart for working people, and she understands the rural culture of America.
And finally, as we mentioned earlier in the show, it took until Friday, December 20th, for Congress to decide to extend the 2018 Farm Bill for another year. The House Ag Committee agreed to a Farm Bill back in May, but Senate Democrats didn't put out their version until the lame duck session late in the year. The 2018 Farm Bill has been extended through September 30th of 2025. And that does it for this week's edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. If you missed any part of today's show, you can download the podcast version. It's at HoosierAgToday.com. And on behalf of all of us here at Hoosier Ag Today, we wish you and your loved ones a happy new year and all the best for a prosperous 2025. I'm CJ Miller, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.